Georgia, by Rustavelli Avenue. This is BeatlePod.com, the week in Georgia in English, coming to you from our pod nest in Tatsminda, the hipster neighborhood of Tbilisi. Today is Thursday, the 17th of July, 2014. On this date in 1203, the Fourth Crusade captures Constantinople. The Byzantine Emperor Alexios III flees into exile. 1762, Catherine the Great becomes a Tsarina of Russia upon the murder of Peter III. 1918, Tsar Nicholas II of Russia and his immediate family and retainers are murdered by Bolshevist Czechists near Ekaterinburg. 1936, an armed forces rebellion starting in Morocco against the recently elected leftist Popular Front government starts the Spanish Civil War. 1945, the not-so-successful Potsdam Conference begins. 1955, Disneyland opens. 1975, U.S. spacecraft Apollo 18 and Soviet spacecraft Soyuz 19 rendezvous and dock in space. 1976, East Timor, or Timor-Leste as it's now known, is annexed and becomes the 27th province of Indonesia. But not for long. 1979, Nicaraguan dictator Somoza resigns and flees to Miami. Birthdays today are James Cagney, Donald Sutherland, and Angela Merkel. Today, back by popular acclaim, we have Will Dunbar and, out of habit, me, Mark Mullen. Thanks again for those posting on our forum. Some excellent rants complimenting me on my realistic assessment of the Kremlin. Also, some people had problems in seeing the links. Sorry about that. We'll try and fix it. Some people could, some people couldn't. We'll try and make that not happen again. If you'd like to comment or ask a question, go to tbilpod.com or send us an email at tbilpod@gmail.com. On the 15th of July, the founder of Rustavioti TV station, Erosi Kitsmanishvili, was found dead in his car in his building's parking lot on Kipshidze Street in Tbilisi. Minister of Internal Affairs said that it was presumed suicide and launched an investigation into the causes of the death. Later, the prosecutor's office joined the investigation. According to the ministry, Kitsmanishvili had a wound to his head, and the gun was and a gun was discovered in the car. Later in the evening, the prosecutor's office released a statement that the gun was registered by Kitsmanishvili the same day. People close to Kitsmanishvili that had spoken with him hours before his death claimed that he could not have committed suicide and that he had clear plans for the future. President Georgi Margvelashvili was in Batumi and immediately said that it was murder. Minister of Justice Teotihuq Lukiani called on everyone to avoid speculation and wait for the results of the investigation. As a reminder, Kitsmanishvili was candidate for mayor in his hometown of Rustavi. On the 15th of June local elections, he came in third with 12% of the votes and was not able to proceed to the second round. Instead, he backed the UNM candidates Mamuka Chikovani for the second round and planned to cooperate, on his Rustavi development projects. Kitsmanishvili was also ambassador to Russia and was one of the driving forces behind the 2003 Rose Revolution. What happened, Will?
Who knows? I mean, it's pretty dodgy, isn't it? He doesn't leave a note. He's making plans to film a new TV station, having meetings about it the same day, fielding calls with his colleagues and his family. It's all a bit mysterious. Also, according to his brother, who was present at the investigation of the crime scene, which must have been very unpleasant for him, the car was completely covered in blood, and the gun was spotless, is what the brother came out and said today, which is also fairly suspicious. He's made a lot of enemies over the years. He was both enemies on the opposition and the government ranks, but more recently it seemed like he was more drifting in the direction of the opposition and fighting against, and sort of swimming against the tide of the government. He supported the National Movement candidate for mayor in Rustavi in the second round. He also made some statements questioning the narrative that the government had put forward about the ownership of Rustavi 2, which was the TV station he founded. So he gave up his shares after falling out with the powers that be in 2005 and handed it to Okurashvili, the then defence minister's best friend, a guy called Kibar Halvashi. And he said something along the lines of, if the current owners aren't legitimate, then I didn't give it to Halvashi legitimately, but I did. And sort of basically saying that the narrative that the current owners of Rustavi 2 are there illegally is not correct, which is interesting.
Certainly the current government is not crazy about Rustavioti, which is now the most popular TV news in the country. You know, there was this effort to try and find out who's got the little black boxes. There's a feeling among a lot of the leadership in Otsneba that the little black boxes where people that monitor ratings. Which the ratings things that they have on top of televisions that the Nielsen Corporation that does Nielsen ratings will monitor which channels people watch. The whole point of that is that it's a random sample, and so it will and it really is quite accurate. They've got a lot of experience with it, but the government doesn't believe that and just doesn't like the idea that everybody is quite understandably watching an opposition TV station to find out to get the real goods on the government. So they're really quite concerned about that.
Also, Rustavi 2 is a potential financially important asset. And, you don't need to see any sort of political conspiracy to suggest that there are some business interests that might profit from his death regarding his involvement in Rustavi 2 and the fact that the stuff that he knows.
That's true. He even said on television several days ago that he had information about Bidzina and that he...
Takeover of Maestro, which was a big story back in 2012 or 11 even, where he was running Maestro, which was then in opposition to the UNM channel, and there was an ownership dispute with the management, and he was sort of forced out of the building physically, and there was a rather funny moment where he sort of tried to climb over a wall, as I recall. What he said on TV the other day was that Bidzina was involved in that takeover of Maestro to make it rather than just a general opposition channel, a pro-Bidzina opposition channel at the time. That's what he alleged.
Yeah, so there's just a lot of messiness in this whole deal. I mean, I didn't know him well. I had not talked to him for many years, but I will say that there was a sort of thing around the revolution. In 2003 and 2004, people were talking about the triumvirate of Zurizhvanya, Misha Saakashvili, and Nino Bourgenadze. That was always false. Nino Bourgenadze never had any influence in that, and she was just there as somebody that was sort of politically tone deaf and non-threatening that could be the interim president while Misha, the senior partner, and Zhvanya, the junior partner, could iron out their situation, and Zhvanya became the prime minister, and Misha, of course, the boss, and she was just never really that important in things. Keats Manishvili was really the third member of the triumvirate, and I think everyone who was here in 2003 knows how incredibly important Rustavi II was to the revolution movement.
Also,
now,
let's not forget that he was then sort of sent to Coventry. I think he spent some time abroad, and he was brought back in 2008. And he was the last so far Georgian ambassador to Russia, and he was seen as someone with whom the Russians could do business with. It was when there was the drumbeat to war, and regardless what people think about the outbreak of the August War in 2008, there were definite concerted efforts on the part of the Georgian government to somehow de-escalate things, and part of that was sending Keats Manishvili to Moscow, where apparently he had some relative success. When he was recalled after the war, he slammed Misha for the way that the war was prosecuted and the way it went down and the decisions that were made, and went further into opposition than he ever had before, eventually teaming up with unpleasant people like Irakli Okhorashvili. But as I said, in recent months, he appears to have found some sort of modus operandi with his old colleagues again. And we have no idea, what might have happened.
Interesting. Well, let's hope that they figure that out. Any death is sad, and in this case, let's be real. I think, despite what some people are saying, he was murdered, and let's hope that we can figure out how that happened, and the perpetrators are brought to justice. According to the CEC's preliminary results, Georgian Dream won the second round of voting in the 12th of July local elections in every city and municipality. Dato Narmania, the Georgian Dream candidate for Tbilisi mayor, received 73% of the votes. His competitor, Nika Melia from UNM, received 27% of the votes. In the first round of the elections, Narmania got 46%. Melia received 28%. The voter turnout for Tbilisi in the second round was 34%. The new mayor said that his plans for Tbilisi will be to improve infrastructure. He also said there will be staff changes in City Hall, no surprise there, and promised to bring in professional and qualified people. Melia said he cannot congratulate Narmania on his victory since it happened because of the detention of the former mayor of Tbilisi and UNM election campaign manager Gigi Ugulava. 7 Georgian Dream candidates for mayor, 1 throughout the country in Batumi, Rustavi, Mskheta, Gori, Telavi, Ozurgeti, and Poti. Georgian Dream also won the elections for heads of Sakrobulos. In Hulo, there was a second round between a candidate from Irma Inaishvili's wacky party, the Alliance of Patriots, and the Georgian Dream candidate.
That's not an ironic name. That's really their name.
Yeah, that's really their name, which is funny considering that they're agents. The latter won with 60%. The Otsneva candidate won with 60%. An army group voted at polling station number 41 in Rustavi. And that polling station was won by the UNM. On the one hand, interesting that a large group of soldiers would vote for the UNM, and that speaks well to the UNM and its popularity. On the other hand, let's be honest, I cannot imagine a army polling station being allowed to support the opposition under the UNM, and that just would have been taken care of forthwith, probably before the elections, and quite, you know, with a whole lot of threats and whatever else. CEC head Tamar Zhvania said that there were no major incidents on Saturday's election. Several days prior to the second round of voting, several large companies offered discounts for customers that would go vote. A commercial appeared on different TV channels on the 11th of July, placed by businesses united for a common goal, saying that if a customer came and showed their ink-marked fingers after voting, they'd get special discounts. The discounts were offered by McDonald's, Wendy's, pharmaceutical companies, Aversi and PSP, supermarkets, Goodwill, Smart, and 2 chains of gas stations, Gulf and Visoil. The companies gave different stories about who initiated the campaign. Goodwill stated that it was a collective idea, while McDonald's stated that the truth, which is that it was the CEC's idea. And I'm guessing it didn't actually originate with the CEC. They welcomed the campaign but denied any involvement. On the 13th of July, former President Edward Shevardnadze was buried with military honors in the garden of his residence in Kurtsanisi next to his wife Nanuli. He was honored by the Speakers of Parliament of Azerbaijan and Armenia, Austrian Minister of Justice, and the Deputy Foreign Ministers of Japan, former U.S. Secretary of State James Baker, who was a good friend and was also representing President Obama, former German Foreign Minister Hans-Dietrich Genscher, Vice Chancellor of Germany, former President of Estonia, Arnold Rüütel, and others. The funeral ceremony and speeches were at Sumepa Cathedral. On the 15th of July, the European Court of Human Rights ruled that Georgia's anti-thiefin law legislation adopted in 2005 to crack down on powerful organized crime groups, the Kanonieri Kurdebi, did not breach the European Convention on Human Rights. Unanimous ruling by a chamber of 7 judges stems from a complaint lodged by a Georgian citizen from Ajada, Izet Ashlarba, who in 2007 was convicted for 7 years in prison of being a member of the thieves' underworld and received instructions from a criminal boss, a thief-in-law. Prosecutor's office questions 3 of Misha's security personnel as well as a former maid about a top-secret matter without giving any further details. The lawyers of those questioned didn't offer any details either. Later Misha told Rustavioti on Monday, the 14th of July, the questioning former Protection Service employees harms the reputation of the country. He noted that those who were questioned also used to work as security staff for Shevardnadze, showing that they served the country and not one particular president.
Indeed, it's true. They did. They were quite. There was a professional outfit set up by the Americans, Delta Force, or something ridiculously macho sounding like that back in the 90s, because it was set up to counter Giorgadze's group in the Interior Ministry, who were constantly trying to kill Shevardnadze. And the Americans decided that wasn't a very good idea, so they set up a new force within the security ministry, which would protect him from the rest of the security ministry.
Exactly. I could never get it all straight, the Alpha and the Omega. And
yeah,
the
Omega Omos was Giorgadze's, I think, or maybe Omega was... I can't remember, but yeah, they're all Greek letters and guys with guns.
Right. Well, one way or another, you know, Shevardnadze, despite all the attempts in 95 and 98, never got popped. So they must have been doing something right. Although a lot of those guys ended up in the security special in the, what do you call it, Interior Ministry Special Operations Units, of which there were 3, which have now all been disbanded. And so Georgia no longer has, at least in the Ministry of Interior, any special operations troops. On the 14th of July, the new Tbilisi City Council held its first session in order to elect a new council head. There are 7 members from UNM in the new assembly. 13 are from the proportional list of Georgian Dream. 24 majoritarian. Nina Borjanadze's United Coalition has 3 members in the council. 2 are from the Alliance of Patriots. Aliko Elisashvili, former journalist and head of the President's Pardon Commission, is the only independent candidate. He was the one from whom people would recognize from Tbilisi Hamkati, which is the most important architectural historic preservation organization. Gio Alibegashvili from Georgian Dream was elected new head of Tbilisi Sakrobolo with 37 votes, 8 against. It was the UNM members and Elisashvili that didn't vote for him. Alibegashvili is a philosophy professor and used to be dean of Tbilisi's state philology faculty. Irakli Çeşitlili from Georgian Dream was elected as head of the Batumi Sakrobulo. Çeşitlili headed the Ajaran government's administration after the 2011 elections and was the spokesman of the former head of Ajada, Levan Vashalomidze. Former deputy prime minister of Abkhazia in 2013 and 14, Beslan Eshba, was denied registration as a candidate for the 24th of August presidential elections after failing an Abkhaz language test examined by a five-member linguistic commission. The four other presidential contenders passed the language exam the same day. The candidates are Prime Minister Raul Hajimba.
You've got the Prime Minister?
Sorry, Member of Parliament Raul Hajimba. Thanks, Will. Leader of the Forum of National Unity of Abkhazia, Acting Defense Minister Merab Kishmaria, Acting Head of the Security Service Aslan Bjania, and Ex-Interior Minister Leonid Zapshba. On the 11th of July, police discovered and seized 2.8 tons of liquid heroin after searching a trailer truck coming from Azerbaijan on the way to Turkey. Two people were detained in the case at the Sarpi border crossing. Total market value of the seized heroin is several hundred million dollars. Interior Minister said that the narcotics came from Afghanistan via Iran and Azerbaijan and was intended for further trafficking into Europe. The amount of heroin seized is unprecedented, surpassing 2.1 tons found last month in Greece. Greek authorities said it was the largest seizure of heroin ever in Europe.
There's also some weird things about this story. So apparently the Azerbaijanis don't know anything about it. And and there's also other various different news sources said that actually, no, it was from Armenia and stuff like this. So there's a lot of things that don't quite add up. And it really is. I mean, it's huge. If it is what it is, if it is what it claims to be, then wow, that's the biggest coup the Interior Ministry could possibly ever score. It's really something.
Other than nuclear material coming through South Ossetia.
Yeah, they do get that too, yeah, that's true. But this is as big as that, if not bigger.
One thing to always watch, and if we had better memories or more administrative wherewithal, we'd be sure to follow up on this in 3 months, is what happens to this stuff? I mean, first of all, let's say it's real and it really happened. You know, that's just a lot of liquid cash. And, you know, what are they going to do with that? You know, dump it into Poti Port or, you know, I don't know, set it on fire or whatever. But, you know, somehow the warehousing and inventory should be monitored there carefully. There's a rumor that Interior Minister Alexandre Chikaidze will be replaced. As a reminder, he was appointed Interior Minister in November 2013, replacing Irakli Kharibashvili, who became president.
He became prime minister
and acting president. he's a, as they're called around here, sportsman. Many people have criticized him as being not the sharpest knife in the drawer. He was, when Ugulava was arrested, he was asked about the moratorium before the campaign, and he said he didn't. It was clear from his answer that he wasn't really too clued into what the moratorium was.
I think it's probably a lot of big words he doesn't know.
Yeah. The energy minister, Kahi Khaladze, commented to journalists on the 16th of July that Rustavioti News deliberately promulgates lies and is biased in favor of the UNM. After the comment, Rustavioti aired a live video interview with Khaladze where he directly blamed Rustavioti for being subjective. Shalva Gorganidze, a prisoner in prison number 8 in Tbilisi, gave an account to Georgian Young Lawyers, Gaila, about prisoner hierarchies. He said there are two men with life sentences known as the Watchers who are allowed to pressure other prisoners, can move freely around prison grounds, and force other prisoners to buy them phone cards, cigarettes, and other things. If a prisoner does not comply, the two men request the prison administration to transfer the prisoner to another building. Shalva reported that he had to fulfill their demands on several occasions. He explained that these individuals are protected by somebody named Ilo, who is the vice director of the prison. Ah, yes, all that prison stuff coming back. Government plans to reopen the Ignaty market on the border with South Ossetia. Reconciliation Minister Pata Zakharishvili said that reopening the market will not contradict a free trade agreement Georgia recently signed with the EU. As a reminder, Ignaty market was an important place for interaction between people from Georgia and South Ossetia, but was closed by Misha's government in 2004 to tackle smuggling. It was one gigantic smuggling market, an amazing place. Everybody making money, Russians, Georgians, Ossetians, and everyone else. It really was the example of the business instinct being right. More powerful than anything else. Aaron Charles, a Brit of African descent, married to a Georgian, was harassed at McDonald's. It made the news. He made a very nice video that got 8,000 hits in just a couple of days, saying everybody should just be nice to each other. Seems like a very nice guy. It was covered by the news. Plenty of other incidents. Two African guys were beat up at the beer festival this week, I heard. Face-to-face Georgian Abkhaz meetings. Officials agreed to evacuate cemeteries in Georgia and Abkhazia in return. Return victims of the Abkhaz crisis to their homelands. The remains must first undergo DNA testing to identify the bodies. The Achadara Cemetery in Abkhazia will soon be evacuated, where it is believed 44 Georgians are buried. Graves in the Kodori Gorge in Vaziani in Georgia will also be evacuated or excavated. If any Abkhazian bodies are found, their remains will be transferred back to their homes. Russia's Rosalkoznador, the veterinary services for phytosanitary surveillance, added new items to the list of vegetable products eligible for export to Russia after a recent visit to Georgia. In a statement, the agency agreed to allow the export of onion, carrot, beet, peppers, red sweet peppers, watermelon, and melon. As a reminder, in June, Georgia started exporting tea, dried fruits, and other products to Russia for the first time after the 2006 embargo on Georgian products. On the 10th of July, the government announced a call for proposals for the design, construction, and operation of a deep-sea port in Anaklia with an initial capacity to handle 7 million tons of cargo, the goal to increase the capacity to at least 40 million tons in 12 years. The government said that the companies with at least 10 years' experience implementing similar projects are invited to submit their proposals before the 1st of October 2014. The government plans to allocate 1,000 hectares of land to an investor for construction of the port and is not considering government co-financing for the project. The port, according to the requirements set by the government, should be operational within 2 years after construction begins.
Don't call it Lazica.
Don't call it Lazica?
No.
Why?
Because that's the idea. It's not Lazica. It's a completely new idea.
Lazica
was Misha's idea, and that was obviously a terrible idea.
Right.
So this identical idea is not to be called Lazica.
Absolutely. Anaklia is what it is. On the 10th of July, the TV show Bina 18 stirred up a commotion after having a musical performance by the band Bonnie. The performance included a man slapping two women on their butts as if they were drums. Meanwhile, the rest of the band was singing. Human rights activists, as well as public defender Ushananuashvili and everybody on Facebook, said that the segment was sexist and freaky and stupid and displayed serious discrimination against women. Neither the TV station nor the show's host planned to apologize, commenting that they picked women's bodies as musical instruments because they think women's bodies are more aesthetic than men's. The show is produced, at least that's what the men thought. The show is produced by GDS, or Georgian Dream Studio, a TV company founded by Beta, B.I.'s rapper son. Yeah, the video was all over Facebook, and everybody was just talking about it like crazy. And it was surely as appalling as everybody said it was.
This is so dumb.
It was just incredibly dumb, yeah. Just and dumb and cheesy horrible.
Stomach-churningly embarrassing.
Yeah. Early Bronze Age bones were discovered in the town of Aspinza in southern Georgia by a joint expedition of archaeologists from the National Museum and Melbourne University. The findings, including the structure of buildings and houseware, were dated to 4000 BC and belonged to the Tugvad Adakasi archaeological culture. The archaeological expedition will continue for two more years. As we said a week or so ago, starting from the 18th of July, regular flights are planned connecting Mestia with Mtskheta. The flight will be 45 minutes, while travel time by land is 7 hours. Flight will be will depart from the airport in Natakhari to Mestia Airport. One-way ticket will cost 65 lari, and there will be four a week. The Georgian Air Company Service Air will carry out the flights with Czech planes with a capacity of 15 passengers. BudgetTravel.com listed Tushetti among the 12 best places you've never heard of, recommended by John Bielby, founder of Wild Frontiers Adventure Travel Company. According to the article, quote, there will be lots of toasting and playing of accordions, and you will find yourself drinking cha-cha out of a ram's horn. You will just have to go with it, end quote. According to, we've all been there. According to the cost, I mean, I don't know, but I've never had cha-cha out of a khanzi.
No, that's crazy. Yeah, that's not. That's, I mean, maybe out of a little teeny tiny one, but
yeah,
out of a,
I've never seen a little teeny tiny, ram's horn.
You do get specific cha-cha.
Yeah, well, you know, the details get lost on Mr. Bielby and, you know, Wild Frontier Adventure Travel Company. According to the cost of living survey for 2014, released by HR company Mercer, Tbilisi was listed as the cheapest city in Europe at number 194. Skopje, Macedonia was 193, and Zurich, Switzerland, the most expensive city in Europe. And I've been to Zurich, and I've been to Skopje, and Tbilisi is way cooler than Zurich and Skopje, and the cheapest city in Europe, so... Come one, come all.
Is this the fabulous Mercer people Mercer. Who also say that Tbilisi is the worst city in Europe?
The worst or the most dangerous?
The worst or the most dangerous?
Yeah, they're. I mean, I don't know. You know, I think they. You know, I don't know. But anyway, they have somebody here who at least checks the prices, and I think that their expense, when they judge the expense, that is fairly accurate. How they would judge safety or best or worst, who knows? But the expense,
badly, evidently.
Yeah, evidently. But I mean, the expense is like, you know, it's rent and I don't know the cost of different stuff. Georgian film Corn Island won the top prize at the 49th Carlo Vivari International Film Festival in the Czech Republic. The film is about the relationship between humans and nature and is set on a small island in the Inguri River, which divides Georgia and Abkhazia. Supposedly, most of the movie is in Abkhaz. The film is in the Abkhazian language and the cast consists of Turkish and relatively unknown Georgian actors. Speaking Abkhaz, sounds interesting. Following up on last week's story on Bishop Jakob's sermon urging people not to vote for the UNM in the local election, several Tbilisi-based NGOs such as TI Georgia, ISFED, and GILA claimed that the bishop's remarks were illegal because the election code clearly prohibits religious organizations from engaging in election agitation. This was completely illegal, what he said, and he should be prosecuted, but we haven't heard anything about that yet, since nobody seems to be interested in prosecuting a bishop. Surprise, surprise. But what is of note is how democracyandfreedomwatch.net staff reported the story. They write, quote, during the last decade, the major NGOs have functioned like a shadow government, whipping up popular sentiments at important crossroads, mobilizing people on the streets, funding TV ads, influencing foreign diplomats, and tipping the balance of power. In 2012, they successfully campaigned to reform broadcasting rules, which led to a breakthrough for the Georgian Dream Coalition in that year's parliamentary election campaign. The NGOs have recently come to see the conservative wing of the Orthodox Church, which has broad support in the population, as a disturbing element in Georgian politics, particularly in relation to its conservative views on gays, lesbians, and other sexual minorities, and campaigned along EU policy lines when Parliament discussed whether to include a clause explicitly offering protection against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, a condition by the EU for agreeing to a visa liberalization treaty, end quote. Yeah, you know, Democracy and Freedom Watch, I mean, first of all...
is a terribly, terribly goofy website.
It really is a goofy website, and they get all of their money from all of these things.
They're funded by OSGF.
Exactly.
They're funded by George Soros, of all people. They have absolutely no leg to stand on. Also, they're also run by Lasha Taguchi, the editor of Resonancy, who pretends that he doesn't run it, and so he's actually occasionally interviewed in that website as, like, an independent expert without mentioning the fact, even though he's committed to ethical journalism, without mentioning the fact that he's actually the boss. Half of their things aren't even bylined. Yeah, it's not exactly the New York Times.
Yeah, it really isn't. So I don't know. Anybody sees anything from them that's annoying or suspicious? Let us know.
Yeah, it was a new segment called DF Watch Watch Watch.
Watch exactly. Government approved a new draft law that outlines criteria for evaluating judges during their 3-year probationary period before they are appointed for life. The draft will soon be sent to Parliament for consideration. They also propose to reduce, and this is important, to reduce the maximum duration for administrative detention from 90 to 15 days. The bill was introduced by Chair of the Judiciary Committee in Parliament, Vakhtang Khmeladze, together with Deputy Shalva Shavgulidze. Administrative detention is a form of punishment left over from Soviet times and has been criticized by Human Rights Watch. 84 law doesn't provide the defendant with proper guarantees of a fair trial. Under Misha, it was used as a tool of political against political opponents to keep them away from public demonstrations. Now it's just used as a tool of political against political opponents. The new bill was discussed in the Human Rights Committee on the 15th of July without a serious result. Soon it will be brought into discussion to the Judiciary Committee. The authors of the bill explained that 90-day imprisonment contradicts the principles of proportionality, and in legislation in European and developed countries, there is a 15-day limit on similar forms of punishment. Shavgulidze said that the detention is a serious restriction on human rights and probably should only be permissible under the criminal code, not in the administrative code. In Kvitis Azrebi this week, journalist Eka Togonidze talked about Shevardnadze, how his decisions affected Georgians, the ups and downs of his political life, different reactions society had to his death compared to the time when Georgians begged Shevi not to leave the post of president in 1993 to 10 years later during the Rose Revolution when the majority of Georgians wanted him to leave office. She concludes that he was president of Georgia for 24 years and will always have his place in Georgian history. Yes, I certainly remember arriving in 97 when most people, I would say probably 80%, were relatively enthusiastic about Shevardnadze. Reluctantly enthusiastic in some cases. There were 10 or 15% that said that things were a mess. I would say that had changed by 99, but the concern about Agorzi Neba and Aslan Abashidze's party in Ajata was so great that most people held their nose and voted for the Citizens Union. But by 2002, everybody thought that he was the problem. Meme this week is a video entitled Exorcism that became popular on Facebook. According to the video description, it was recorded this year in Kutaisi. The video shows a young man apparently possessed by a demon being exorcised by Toma Betanelli, an alleged miracle priest. His real name is Guram Betashvili, but information regarding his religious activities are contradictory. He has a parish, but it's not known whether the patriarchy recognizes his alleged miracles. An article by Monica Lena in EurasiaNet.org about the victory of Euroskeptic parties in May's European parliamentary elections and how this will affect Georgia. She argues that while Euroskeptics won only about 140 out of 751 seats, their numbers may be sufficient to hinder initiatives to advance Georgia and fellow ex-Soviet republics, Moldova and Ukraine, towards EU membership. It's quite an interesting article, and it's nice to see somebody. She's a very smart Italian journalist, and it's good to have somebody analyzing European issues from in the Georgian context and what that might read. I haven't read anybody else writing intelligently about that issue and what it might mean for Georgia in the medium and long term. Article by analyst Lincoln Mitchell of the New York Mitchells entitled Georgia Without a Map, saying that Georgia will likely not receive a map from NATO at the Wales Summit, which everybody kind of knew, nor in the medium.
NATO has said that.
NATO has said, yeah, not going to happen, nor in the medium range future. In that case, Georgia's leaders will have to prepare policy to face dual changes of ensuring national security, maintaining pro-West and pro-NATO domestic sentiment, despite another setback. Yeah, kind of, but I don't know. I think everybody's just going to keep on doing whatever NATO says, and, you know, why not? Nothing to lose, really, and you got to have an army, I guess. Another obit for Chevy by Thomas Goltz for, interestingly, Russia Today, who reported, or RT, as I guess it's called, who reported on the conflict of post-Soviet caucuses and crossed paths with Chevy on numerous occasions. The two men bonded during the siege and fall of Sukhumi in 1993. Goltz is a very talented writer, very funny guy. As usual, almost all of his stories are as much about Thomas Goltz as anything else, but a lot of charming anecdotes in that one. Interesting article by Temuraz Shamoyan for Rudaw about Georgia's ethnic Kurds eyeing the growing independence of Iraqi Kurds. Georgia's Kurds came to the country when fleeing Ottoman persecution a century ago. Were called Yezids, which is more...
Well, Georgia has both Yazidi Kurds and regular Kurds.
Yes, exactly. The article says that they were called Yezids, which is sort of more religion than anything else, but it wasn't exactly so accurate. But the Soviets called them Yezids rather than Kurds, usually, where they did not face particular discrimination. As a result, many actually feel disconnected from their brethren in the Middle East, yet they are proud the prospect of an independent Kurdish state. Research report by Anna Dvali and Edita Badasyan on problems of in Kvamokartli in the Samtsuk Javakheti region and foreign policy preferences of the local population. Paper discussed basic problems and views of Georgia's ethnic minorities. Worth a read. Article in Democracy and Freedom Watch about Chechen refugee from Georgia, Sulkhan Muzayev, who claims he is harassed by government bodies and is not allowed to leave the country. But he holds Georgian citizenship. Article by Pata Shamugia in New Eastern Europe, EU, about the famous Georgian writer Zura Karomidze in his book Caucasian Foxtrot, published in 2011. It provoked public debate in 2014 when the government presented Karomidze as a candidate for ambassador to the UK. Upon announcement of his candidacy, the media published an extract from the book where the author's character, who is a Svan, Dama is dreaming about an ancient pagan ritual involving homosexual activities. The extract offended the Georgian Dream member of parliament from Svaneti, genius Soso Jachvliani. A book available on Amazon called Lucky Peach, issue number 11, All You Can Eat, which is kind of like a regularly published book. It's about various odd food customs. There's a whole long thing about the Georgian wedding supra. Contribution, interestingly, is from Christina Nickel, who has written a yet-to-come-out novel on Georgia called Waiting for the Electricity that I have not read yet, have an advanced copy of, but she's supposedly quite a good writer. Also available on Amazon, a new compendium of piano music for Georgian dances by Recep Jordania. It talks a little bit about dance in the in France and the exiled Georgian community there outside of Paris. All these things to read will be posted on our forum. If anybody has any problems finding the links again, let us know. This week's GeoCapital number is 0. This is the number of suicides that were solved by the Ministry of Internal Affairs investigations last month, according to crime statistics published by the Ministry of Internal Affairs. There were 68 suicide incidents in June 2014. According to the same statistics, suicide cases reduced in comparison to the previous year, which had 81 cases.
How do you solve a suicide?
You say, it was a suicide.
Oh, I see.
Amidani Movie Theater, close to the Philharmonia, has daily English movies. This week, 24th of July, you can see How to Train Your Dragon 2, still, at 2:30 p.m. Million Ways to Die in the West at 8 p.m., which I saw, and it's funny. Dawn of Planet of the Apes in 3D at 7:45 and 10:30 p.m. Dom Kino across from Rustaveli Metro will be showing in Russian, bizarrely, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Friday the 18th, Saturday the 19th, Moonrise Kingdom, Sunday the 20th, Grand Budapest Hotel, 7 p.m. I went to a very cool cafe the other day called Cafe 78 in Sololaki. The story of the founder and owner, Merva, is awesome. She's from Tbilisi, Berkeley, and Tehran. Open 11 to 11, closed Sundays. It's at Lado Asatiani Street 33, that which is, if you don't know, sort of the Sololaki Highway. Just off of Kikodze Street, go and tell her tvilpod.com sent you. Very important updates about the new visa regulations for foreigners, so listen carefully. These come in force on the 1st of September. Information comes from the workshop by the Public Service Development Agency for AmCham members on the 8th of July. One, for those persons falling under the 360-day visa-free rule, the new time limit is 90 total days within a 180-day time frame. Entry under these conditions is only for touristic purposes, not study or work. Two, issuance of visas should be conducted in almost all cases by diplomatic missions and consular offices of Georgia abroad, not at the border. Three, residence permits will be of the following type: work residence permits, study, family reunification, former citizen, stateless person, special residency permits, permanent residence permits, investment residence permits. Residence permits are obtained in Georgia. Any residence permit currently held by a foreigner will remain valid through the expiry date of the permit. The enactment of this law does not negate the validity of that permit. Foreigners who are currently here under the 363 visa-free entrance rule can continue to remain in Georgia under this condition. However, after the 1st of September, if they leave Georgia, they'll be required to re-enter based on the new regulations. Note, if a foreigner is currently working in Georgia and will enter Georgia after the 1st of September, they require a work D1 or entrepreneur D2 visa issued by a diplomatic mission or consular office of Georgia abroad, not at the Georgian border. After arriving on a D-1 or D-2 visa, they can apply for work residence cards on the territory of Georgia as an investor. Under the new law, foreign investors coming to Georgia for investment purposes require an investor visa issued by diplomatic missions and consular officers of Georgia abroad. After investing at least 300,000 lati, they can directly apply for an investor residence permit. Any visitor that enters Georgia legally and then decides to invest at least 300,000 lati can directly, without leaving Georgia, apply for an investor's residence permit. It's encouraged that all eligible persons currently working and living in Georgia apply for a temporary permanent residence permit soon before the 1st of September deadline. It takes 30 days to process. Please visit Q&A document of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs website for more detailed information. On Friday, the 18th of July, 6 p.m., that's tomorrow, the Women's Fund in Georgia, together with the Austerium Association and Europe House Georgia, will launch a project, Her Home, aimed at supporting homeless single mothers. The project is an exhibition and sale of accessories, furniture, and other decorative items used for interior design. All contributions from the sales will be used to support a group of homeless women who live in rundown conditions in an old hospital and suffer from multiple forms of discrimination. Freedom Square. Visit facebook.com/womenfundgeorgia. Friday, the 18th of July at 5 p.m., Georgia's Future Spotters is organizing its seventh biweekly meetup at Bauhaus Cafe. The meetings are aimed for activists to share ideas and projects and are a place where you can ask for necessary help. It's number 5 Abdo Tbileli Street for near Gudiashvili. For additional details, join the group, hashtag Future Spotters Georgia on Facebook. On Saturday, the 19th of July at 3 p.m., EBS volunteer Iona Sakalaraki from Greece and Alice Cretin from France, unfortunate name, invite you to the final event and exhibition of their project on creative writing and photography with IDP children. It will be at Caucasian House. The IDP camps of Skra and Shuamiani became the organizer's home for 2 weeks, and their project with the children enabled a step-by-step learning process and experience sharing from both sides. The address is 20 Tabidze Street. From the 20th until the 27th of July, there will be the Art Geni Festival held at the Ethnographic Museum in Tbilisi. The festival will host concerts and events with participants from different parts of Georgia and an exhibition sale of traditional arts and crafts. Check out Art Geni, artgeni.ge, and you can purchase tickets at biletebi.ge. On Thursday, the 7th of August, from 6:30 to 8:30, the Association of Ukraine and Great Britain invites you to a private viewing of the exhibition Georgia, Ukraine, Europe by Georgian artist Levan Varazi. The exhibition will run from the 8th to the 15th of August. The address is 9 Linden Gardens, Notting Hill Gate, London. For additional information, you can go to their site, www.augh.co.uk, or their Facebook is facebook.com/augb.sub, or email Ludmila Pekarska, that's Ludmila Pekarska, at augb.co.uk. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That's Tango, X-Ray, Tango, Bravo, Uniform, Kilo. Our email address is tfilpod@gmail.com, or post to the forum on our website, www.tfilpod.com. And from 2006, we'll finish with From Think, sung by Tina Grace. This is Hush Now.
your sweetness. Never know completeness, but that's where I've been. Hush now, pretty baby. Hush now. Gotta get me some.